Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. NASA Geographic Channel will be traveling through another dimension tonight, as Rod Serling would say, a dimension not only of sight, sound, and the mind, and of Mars. That's the name and subject of this unique miniseries of things now and to come. Executive producer Justin Wilkes joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Our second subject today is a harrowing one, which happens far too often. Human trafficking. Fusion launched its own investigation of this last night with the traffickers, and we will join the journey next half hour with host and journalist Delphar Hedayat. Super window shopping season begins next week, and did you ever wonder what it takes to create those holiday store displays? Well, GSN's Window Warriors shows you how they come together. While those warriors buy up for $100,000 and big store design contracts, check out this gift horse an hour from now with executive producers Michael Levitt and Jill Galante. Also ahead, to Mississippi, HBO's Sunday Trino Success, our classic trivia question this week, and we remember PBS journalist Gwen Ifill, who passed away earlier today. We will have the details. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and whenever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Thank you for joining us on the program All About Television. 90-day edition coming your way this Monday afternoon. 60 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. A lot to get to today. Some wonderful guests coming aboard. And we invite you, as always, to be in the conversation. It's very simple. Raise your voice, then use this number. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open right now, SimonApple04 by name. You can find it and join it at our homepage. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our very good friend Rick Webb, I'm sure he is celebrating the Philadelphia Eagles victory yesterday. He is already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Justin Wilkes from Mars and one of the producers doing it, Radical Media, will join me here in New York after these news notes. All three of HBO's new Sunday night series this fall are set to come back. Westworld, Divorce, and Insecure with Issa Rae have a second season in hand after winning gross audience that was outperforming or on the same level with programs like Game of Thrones and Girls during their rookie season. It's possible, by the way, that Westworld, unlike Divorce, and Insecure will wait until 2018 to have its debut. That's according to an interview that the head of HBO, Casey Blore, did with The Hollywood Reporter earlier today. So once again, all three of HBO's Sunday night series that debuted this fall, Westworld, Divorce with Thomas Hayden Church, who was on this program a couple of months ago, and Insecure with Issa Rae, will come back. Divorce and Insecure in 2017, Westworld probably waiting because of its ambition till 2018. Amazon Studios will take its acclaimed dramedy One Mississippi into a second season. Launched earlier this year, One stars Tina Turow as a person whose hometown return is turned upside down by her mother's death. Turow created the series with Oscar winner Diablo Cody of Juno fame. And in the last half hour, we confirmed that Gwen Ifill, the co-anchor of PBS NewsHour and the long-running host of Watching Week in Review Friday nights on public television, died earlier today from cancer. She was 61. I'll have more to say about Ifill's career later in the program, and we'll do something special in her honor as well. So stay tuned for that. And that is News Notes for today. Now joining us live from New York, the executive producer of National Geographic Channel's ambitious new miniseries, Mars, the premiere tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, Justin Wilkes. Justin, it's wonderful to have you. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me here. Pleasure.
This is a very big deal for not just National Geographic, but for you and the company you work with, Radical Media, because you are one of the key executives there. Why take this assignment on?
I think the question is, you know, why not take the assignment on? It's a good metaphor, I think, you know, for Mars. Over time, we've looked at mountains, we've looked at oceans. We've always said, why climb mountains? You know, why cross oceans? Why go to the moon? In this case, why go to Mars? It's a huge story. And for a company like Radical that's done a lot in the nonfiction space, documentary space, what appealed to us is that there are so many folks out there today actually engineering this first mission to Mars. So the idea that we could bring that to life through documentary storytelling and then be able to flash forward to the future to 2033 and actually bring audiences on a journey to the Red Planet, watching our crew going through the trials and tribulations that they're going to be going through, it proved both, you know, an incredibly exciting storytelling opportunity for us and obviously a challenging one as well.
And you just hit it, Justin. It's storytelling, because I believe it's the first time that Radical is doing a series or that is doing both scripted and unscripted, what we call the hybrid approach.
It's true, and I think it might be the first time most people have tried to do this before. We were hard-pressed to find other examples of this particular kind of storytelling, but to be honest with you, we didn't set out to do anything so different than you know, the way we would normally tell a story. This particular story lent itself to this hybrid approach, again, because we wanted to showcase what was happening today in 2016 and actually bring that to life for the audience so they understand this is real, this isn't science fiction. People are actually engineering this mission now. And then have the adventure and the drama that's actually going to take place in the year 2033 when they're on that mission. That's really where this sort of hybrid narrative kind of came into being.
Nasty Graphic is drawing this as the beginning of really a new era for themselves. In fact, starting tonight and starting with this program, Nasty Graphic Channel is going to become National Geographic under this campaign that was announced a few weeks ago called Further. And was there any additional pressure on this venture because Geographic is really looking at this as the beginning for them as a whole, as I mentioned earlier, a dimension of storytelling, a dimension of programming that they're getting into and they want to bring to people on a regular basis?
I would say that, you know, for myself, like millions of other people out there, you grew up with the magazine and you grew up with that yellow box, and that yellow box really was our window to the world. You know, it was a magazine that was around before there was even photography. So there's a incredibly high bar that has been set on behalf of the brand to live up to in terms of the level of authenticity and also the history of exploration and adventure that the National Geographic brand has always stood for. I think the pressure for us was more coming from that side of it and just sort of the burden that we wanted to live up to, more so than, you know, are we going to live up to the rebranding of the channel? Because from where I'm sitting, that brand has an incredible legacy, and if anything, they're just reminding people that this is the kind of storytelling that they've been known for over a century.
Mm-hmm. What was more tough to do, the unscripted or the scripted side? By the way, the scripted side, I should say, deals with two astronauts as part of a team, two of them being Asian American, by the way. There's a lot of diversity in this program, too, who get the opportunity to colonize Mars.
Each side presented its own challenges. I mean, on the documentary side, we traveled the globe. We had crews that went down to Antarctica and visited the McMurdo Ice Base as a sort of present-day comp for what a Mars colony might look like and function like. We had crews show to Hawaii to document the High Seas project, which is co-sponsored between NASA and some educational institutions that are actually putting real people through a Mars simulation so they can see what the impact of an isolation study would be. We were at NASA, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Hawthorne, California, with Elon. We went to Kazakhstan to watch the Roscosmos and the European Space Agency launch the ExoMars probe that, you know, recently is orbiting Mars's atmosphere. So from a logistics standpoint, like any, you know, complicated production, you've got crews running around the world. But then what we also had on the drama side was being able to take all that information that's coming back in real time and then apply it to the script writing and then ultimately to the technical details of the production design and how we chose to bring these stories to life. So each side had its own set of challenges to it, not the least of which was how do we even edit this thing and bring both of these pieces together.
Justin Ropes is not only one of the executive producers of Mars, he is also the president of media entertainment for Radical Media. It's one of the two major production companies that worked on this project. The other, Imagine Entertainment. Yes, the folks involving people like Oscar-winning director Ron Howard and his partner Brian Grazer. They're all involved with Mars. It is National Geographic Channel's most ambitious miniseries and premieres tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Justin joins me here in New York this half hour, air-rated exclusive on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you also in New York. Delighted to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. If you have a question or comment, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, by name. Welcome guest 1482 in the room. Rick Webb, our friend from Philly, also still in. Coming up on Friday, we will join you either at 4 or 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 1 or 1:30 p.m. Pacific, an hour or an hour and a half later than normal. And among our guests, we will have the cinematographer for one of the popular shows on the CW, DC's Legends of Tomorrow. His name is Malhan Williams. He has done quite a bit of TV cinematography work over the recent years, and we'll talk to him all about it. It's a very, very interview for him, and we've got him. That's this Friday, 3 p.m. 4 or 4:30 Eastern. That's 4 4:30 Eastern, 1 1:30 Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. And next week, we've got a trio of episodes for your Thanksgiving week, back to back to back, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, each day at 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. Our kickoff guest on Monday, the creator of MacGyver, which is having a great run in its new version on CBS on Friday nights, Lee Zoltoff. That's Lee Zoltoff, the creator of MacGyver. Well, that's what he thinks about the CBS reboot. We'll also follow up on a project he was involved with a couple years ago called The Next MacGyver. Lee Zoltoff from MacGyver, he will lead off our Monday episode next week, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, back to back to back. We're going to make your Thanksgiving week very special, and more details about that week later on in the program. Justin, who originated the idea of doing Mars? Was it your company? Was it Geo? Was it Imagine? And how did you all get together?
The idea actually came initially from a book that we had come across from an old friend of ours, Stephen Petranek, who had given a number of TED Talks around a similar topic of how we will get to Mars. And he wrote a book that went around, and he interviewed some of the leading science and technology experts who were actually in the process of engineering the mission. And when we got our hands on the book, we realized there's a lot of just great storytelling meat here to be able to explore. And that really coincided with a meeting that I was fortunate enough to have with the folks at SpaceX, with Elon Musk as well. And over the course of that conversation, he really made it abundantly clear that there's a need to tell the story as to why we as a species need to go to Mars, which I just thought was absolutely fascinating. So that's kind of where the idea germinated, and we've had a relationship with Imagine and with Ron and Brian for a while now. We've done some other projects together, including the first documentary that Ron worked on about Jay-Z, which I was fortunate enough to produce. And we just thought they'd be great partners for this for a lot of the obvious reasons. They've worked in this this no pun intended space before, and we called them up, and they were very excited to jump on board. Similarly, Brian had some early conversations with Elon, so everything kind of came together in a very organic way. And then from there, we just decided to bring it to the National Geographic Channel, knowing a little bit about some of the rebranding that they were undergoing, and that this project might be the exact kind of thing that they were looking for, which it was, thankfully.
As you were doing interviews with people like Elon Musk and others, was there sort of a consensus about why we should go to Mars and how soon we should?
There's a slight differences of opinion in terms of the actual date, but I think for the most part, everyone can agree with the following, which is it's a necessity that we become an interplanetary species, and if we want to back up the human race, no matter when you sort of prescribe to when this planet may no longer exist in its current form, being able to get off of it seems like a pretty good idea. That's a very long-term strategy, but that's something that everyone kind of agrees with. Two, we're a species that's always looked up to the night sky. We've always looked beyond, like I was saying before, and this is our next greatest adventure. So there's just something very exciting about that, and that's really in our DNA. And then the third reason, I think, which is a little bit of the halo of even the success of the Apollo program, is that when you have something so big, an idea so big that everyone in the country and then eventually the world can rally behind, it really helps move the needle in how we can learn to probably be a better species even on this planet. It makes us work together and cohabitate together. So for those three reasons, those sort of seem to be the top reasons why most people that we talk to want to go or think we should go. In terms of the dates, the earliest people are saying is sort of the early 2030s in our show. We're set in 2033. I think the more conservative estimates put us toward the end of the 2030s, maybe even into the early 2040s. But irrespective of that, seemingly short period of time, we're going to Mars. One way, shape, or form, there's enough momentum right now in the science community, in the technology community, in private enterprise, in public governments that are actually pointing to wanting to do this mission.
Mm-hmm. Talk about how this program was put together. Did you run on sort of parallel tracks? You do the interviews and the nonfiction part at the same time as the fiction part, or did you work on a case where, okay, we're going to do all these interviews, and then whatever comes out of the interviews, we will fuel, pardon the pun, into the scripts?
It was more the latter, and there was definitely some overlap, but for the most part, we started off with the documentary material Because we knew that by sitting with these people, it was going to be essentially, you know, the greatest TED conference on earth, because we were able to just get so many amazing minds feeding into the ideas. Though at the same time, we had a fantastic team of writers that were starting to work on the drama alongside of some of our technical experts who were also consulting. So as that information and those transcripts were coming in from those interviews, we were able to feed that back to the writers' room. And then conversely, the writers were able to come up with scenarios that we could then pressure test with our experts as we were interviewing them. So it began with the documentary, but then there was a really nice period of time where the two pieces overlapped one another, and that led to the final scripts and then ultimately production.
Mm-hmm. And how did the script get fashioned? How did you decide, okay, we're going to go this way as opposed to that way?
I mean, through a lot of creative development, a lot of writer's room conversations, a lot of input from Ron and from Brian, from our director, Everardo Goot, from myself, we all, you know, sat around, and ultimately it had to be a compelling story. We knew for this to work, it can't just be a science experiment or an educational program. There had to be real drama to it. And though we wanted that drama to be rooted in fact and in science, it still had to be dramatic. So really, again, going back to just what attracted us to this story, there's the stakes for something like this are so high. It's you know, an incredible challenge that you're putting any human being through or group of human beings. So most of the decisions that we made were always rooted in how do we make this more dramatic, right? How do we find ourselves on the planet, and what happens once we get there, and how do we set up a place for a permanent residence, and what are the challenges that are going to come from that? And then, you know, one thing sort of leads to another, and the story kind of starts dictating where it wants to go.
Talk about the director, Eduardo Gould, I believe his name is, and he did a film called Days of Grace that got a lot of attention outside Mexico. That's where it comes from. How was he picked to lead this miniseries?
Yeah, Everardo Gout, and he's an incredible filmmaker. We had seen my partners here at Radical, as well as Ron and Brian, had all seen Days of Grace when it had come out. It had gotten everyone's attention coming off of the Cannes Film Festival. And what was really special about that movie was he tells a story that takes place in Mexico City over three time frames, and the characters all interconnect, although you're not sure exactly what the relationships are until the end of the movie. And he also used a variety of media to tell the story, different film stocks. It had a very sort of immersive, visceral approach to it. And when we started talking about Mars and looking for a filmmaker that could really bring these two worlds together of documentary and drama, but also just tell an immersive story, we felt that he would be a great choice, mainly because his whole focus was on the humanity of this. He said, as important as the technology is and as important as getting the science right, this has to be a human story. And Days of Grace was very much a human story. He also had referenced some other earlier films, one of them being Das Boot, the German World War II submarine movie, which we all thought was kind of interesting because you wouldn't normally think of that as a good comp for a space movie. But when you talk about a group of people in a confined situation for a long period of time, how those people relate to each other and how that movie itself was shot became a really interesting comp for the Mars Project. So he just brought a lot to the table in terms of the character development, visual style, the plot points themselves, and then ultimately, how do we find that right balance between a documentary story and a scripted story?
And since you mentioned Doc Boo, I saw both the miniseries and the movie, Wolfgang Peterson's masterpiece, by the way, and it has that sort of claustrophobic, intimate feel of tension that goes there from start to finish. I guess that's what the filmmaker wanted as well, was that kind of tension of, are we going to get this mission accomplished? If not, where are we going to end up? Somewhere in space, and so on.
Yeah, and I think there's a claustrophobia that comes with that as well. I mean, keep in mind, the mission just to get to Mars is going to be anywhere from, say, 7 to 9 months on the shorter time frame. The crew is living in very small quarters. Now, our story picks up when they're on final approach to the Mars surface, but they've all been living together and working together and sleeping together and eating together for the last, 7 or 8 months. And then when they get there, they have to establish a beachhead, and it's not like you can just walk outside and blow off steam. You have to put on an EVA suit. You're still contained. So this idea of just claustrophobia and what that does to the human psyche and how that maybe even starts to influence some of your decisions and your interpersonal relationships is very ripe for dramatic storytelling.
Jonathan Wilkes is one of the executive producers of Mars. It's the ambitious miniseries that premieres tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on what is now National Geographic Channel, but by the end of the night will become known as just National Geographic. Justin joins me here in New York this half hour on Tamabi Televised. I'm Simon Applebaum. Delighted you are joining us wherever you are on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Justin or other guests coming up in the next hour or so, give us a ring, 646-652-3906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it on our homepage, that's blogtalkradio.com/televised, where you can, by the way, find recent episodes of our show and enjoy them anytime you like. Speaking of enjoying a week, a really enjoyable program coming up a week from Wednesday. That'll be our pre-Thanksgiving episode. We mentioned earlier we're doing 3 episodes back to back to back each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week to lead up to your Thanksgiving. And we got a great 90-minute show in store for you. Natural Wild has got a very interesting miniseries of its own coming up. It's called Savage Kingdom, and we will have the producer of it. That's Harry Marshall. Also, we will have an unusual country music TV, CNP documentary, not about turkeys, but about chickens. It's called Chicken People. And when do you see it? It's really neat. We have got the director of the show, Nicole Hyman. And finally, we'll be reuniting with the people from BYU, Brigham Young University Television, the only college that has a national television network. And they have a special for Thanksgiving featuring the wonderful actor John Rhys Davies. It's called Winter Thaw. It's based on a very famous tale called Martin the Cobbler. And we will have the producer, the writer, and the director all with us. That is next Wednesday, November 23rd, pre-Thanksgiving, live, exclusive, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So be with us. We'd love to have you along for the pre-Turkey Day festivities. Justin, it's no secret that Imagine, the company headed by Ron Howard and Brian Grazer, want to do more television. They're the folks, of course, at 24. They have an expanded TV schedule, but they in particular want to do more with Nat Geo. Last year or so, they did a show called Breakthrough that General Electric was involved with. They have this program. They're doing a show called Geniuses that Ron will do the first episode, direct the first episode. Knowing them for a little bit, why does LeBron and Ryan, why do Ron and Brian want to get more involved with Geo?
I think that is, I can't directly speak for them, but I think knowing their sensibilities and knowing their past work, and also knowing that they've had a very amazing history and legacy of television on the network side, I think here you have an opportunity to really help shape the direction of a brand, being National Geographic, and getting in at the ground level, getting to create premium, high-quality stories that live up to the standard of what they may have past experienced at the places like HBO and certainly network television, I think is an exciting opportunity. And it certainly is for us here at Radical as well. What I'm encouraged by, and I know Ron and Brian feel the same way, there's this return that audiences are demanding to premium content. And I think what you're seeing across the board, not just from the OTT platforms and not even just from the traditional premium cable platforms, you're seeing some of these smaller networks like the Nat Geos of the world be able to now step up and play in that arena by producing high-quality shows and taking big swings like this, like Genius, like some of the other programming that they have in the pipeline.
Being the key Radical Me executive you are, do you see this as a major stepping stone for your company in terms of doing either more scripted television or doing more hybrid?
I think it's both, and I also think it's it just falls into the category of premium. You know, as far as we're concerned, our history and legacy has mostly been in the non-scripted space. We've done a lot of music programming over the years. We've had some scripted narrative experience, but yes, I think for us this is a big swing, you know, on a number of counts, not least of which is just the amount of attention Mars is getting, which is fantastic. But it also opens a door for us to develop, you know, other kinds of stories on a similar level. In terms of hybrid specifically, I wouldn't want to limit us to just one format or another, though I do think in this case, again, this format lended itself specifically to how we wanted to tell this story. And maybe there's other, you know, other genres and other stories out there that could benefit from a similar method of storytelling.
There's another pioneer we've talked to a number of times over the years in this program, Stephen David, whose production company has done a number of things like The Making of the Mob for AMC, American Speed for NASCAR, other projects. He's doing one on Playboy, Hugh Hefner, and again, they involve some scripted material along with largely unscripted. As we go forward with hybrid, are there any things that you see in terms of what we have to watch out for or what producers, given the experience you've had with Mars, should watch out for in terms of how to do it, how not to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think any time something starts to fall into a format, it inevitably you know, is going to get watered down in some way, shape, or form. And I'd hate to see this as a new genre that now, you know, many other people are going to start to subscribe to, because I don't personally believe that every story necessarily lends itself to this particular treatment. I think based on some of the past examples that we had seen and even some of the pitfalls that we encountered in the editorial, is if you're an audience and you're watching a scripted hour, you're conditioned to how that hour is going to unfold. You're conditioned to how you're going to start to latch on to lead characters or pick up certain plot points along the way. And the last thing you want is to get thrown out of that world into a documentary, because then suddenly you know it's like you've accidentally switched the channel. And conversely, if you're watching, you know, the most engaging documentary program you could possibly think of, with some unbelievable access and footage, the last thing you want to do is get switched out of that to a drama program. So really finding that balance, it was certainly the hardest thing for us to do. And I think if anybody's going to be working in, if you want to call it this genre or this format, I think that's perhaps the greatest word of caution, I would say, you know, which is just go in eyes wide open as to, you know, as to how best to tell the story.
And given you're the president of Media Entertainment Radical, what's coming up after Mars? What's next in the pipeline?
Well, we have a lot of great stuff in the pipeline. We've been doing a lot of programming for Netflix over the past year, and we're continuing with some great projects with them. We actually have a show premiering tomorrow night on ABC. It's David Blaine's next magic special. So, if anybody is interested in some great magic, they can watch that. We have a number of other documentaries that we're working on, and always developing more projects. So it's a great time for us.
Great company, too. Their track record, Radical Media, is really marvelous. If you haven't seen their shows, some of them are on YouTube, some other places like Netflix. Check them out for sure. But definitely check out Mars. It premieres tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, on what is now National Geographic Channel. At the end of the night, it will become, thanks to their further campaign, National Geographic. Yes, with the borders of the magazine. Check the local listings for where Nat Geo is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, two places to go, Nat Geo TV, NatGeo.com, that's NatGeo.com, and especially for this program, Mars, here's where you can go. It's www.MarsVanHome.com. That's www.MakeMarsHome.com. I'll say it again, www.MakeMarsHome.com, and for the network, NatGeo.com. Justin Wills, executive producer of Mars, president of Media Entertainment for Radical Media, one of the two major companies doing the other, Imagine Entertainment. Thank you again for joining us. Best of luck with this miniseries starting tonight, and all great stuff coming up. It's been a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time and your enthusiasm for the show. Great to be here.
You are welcome. It looks marvelous. Take care. All the greatest.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Justin Wills, executive producer of Mars, joining me here in New York. Mark and Marty Televised coming your way, but first, some fine words from the terrific people at Audible.com. A lot of folks love J.R.R. Tolkien, whether it's The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. And if you haven't heard The Hobbit, well, Audible.com is a great sound experience for you just waiting for you. And that is The Hobbit, with a great all-star cast. It's one of their bestsellers, and you can get it when you get a 30-day free trial to Audible.com using this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com is from Amazon, and it's a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information, all digital, over 180,000 titles to choose from, every category represented, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, through Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service, and get it through Amazon, customer service, absolutely more than beyond quality. So, check it out, audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, check out The Hobbit or another free audiobook of your choice, and learn why so quickly that audible.com is the best digital sound experience around. It entertains, informs, and yes, inspires, and it's all waiting for you at audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, we're going down to Earth, and we're going to explore the mystery and the unfortunateness of human trafficking. Fusion started a series last night that definitely needs to be seen. It's called The Traffickers, and we've got the journalist behind it. Host Nafala Hidayat will join us live. She's on her way from New York to the airport, and we'll catch up with her after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio in the universe. It's www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month, and growing. It's your home for the Kia D Unplugged Show. Check it out. There's nothing like it. Tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best of the Kia are available for you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our 90-day edition of Tomorrow We Tell Life, opening up your week on this Monday afternoon. Simon Applebaum live with you from New York. Happy to have you aboard. More great guests coming in the hour ahead, and we invite you to call the program. All it takes is a call from you, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It's available at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televive. Guest 1482, and our good friend Rick Webb from Philadelphia, still in the room. Last night, Fusion launched a very important series about a subject that continues to grow and grow and grow, despite the fact that there's a number of scripted series about the subject. I'm referring to human trafficking. It is a subject that is worldwide. It happens for a lot of reasons, and it's something that, believe it or not, governments all over the place should definitely do something about. The series is called The Traffickers, and joining me here in New York, en route to one of our wonderful airports, our fair city, is the host and journalist of the series, Nilufar Hidayat. Nell, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
Nell, what's been the reaction so far to your series, almost 24 hours in?
So we've had a lot of people commenting on Facebook, on Twitter, and reaching out to me personally as well, all saying the same thing, that they just are shocked by the episodes and the breadth of what we cover, because, as you know, The Traffickers doesn't just look at sex trafficking, and certainly last night's two episodes were all about the trafficking of babies that's kind of crept into international adoption, and also you got a glimpse at the very, very action-packed episode on rhino horn smuggling. So it's just amazing for people to actually acknowledge that trafficking isn't only about sort of sex and people, even though the episodes that we do cover both subjects.
Now let's cut to the chase. Why is this happening? Why, despite all the world attention, miniseries, Lifetime did a series like 10, 15 years ago with Mira Savino in the lead, it was well seen
right.
by a lot of people in the United States. Why does this continue to be an issue like human trafficking? It seems to just grow as opposed to the other way around.
I think so long as there are people who are willing to exploit and so long as there are people to be exploited, this will never end. I mean, you can imagine that some of the world's greatest civilizations was built on the back of slavery. I mean, to be frank, the USA being one amongst many, you know, the Romans, the Greeks, the Persians, all of those empires were built on the backs of exploitation. So it seems to be a really insidious part of humanity's story, of our story as people. And what the traffickers try to do across the 8 episodes is understand and unpack how human beings exploit the world around them. So whether we do an episode on rhino horn smuggling or gold trafficking, or we do one, as we do, about sex trafficking in Europe, it seems to always tap into this innate nature, the very dark side of human beings to want to make the most out of very little. And certainly in the sex trafficking episode that we do, which is coming up hopefully very soon on Fusion and online, it's focused on sex trafficking in Europe, somewhere where they have very, very liberal attitudes towards trafficking itself, towards the selling of sex. And really, Simon, the only conclusion that I came up with is that so long as men want to sleep with women for money, they will find a way to, the traffickers will always find a way to provide those women. So really and truly, if there's going to be any effort or any success made in carteling this, then it will have to be on the side of the demand.
What shocked a lot of people who saw the premiere last night was that the first episode dealt with adoption. And for anyone who thinks that human trafficking is, oh, it's somewhere in Europe, oh, it takes place in Asia, oh, it takes place in Russia, et cetera, it can't be in my country, you definitely tore that theory apart, because in the first part of the show, it takes place in the United States.
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the main aims that Fusion, the executives at Fusion, Danny Eilenberg and Keith Fuma, and also my executives in London, Simon and Jonathan Chin, the Lightbox company, who the indie that made the project, the film, it was something very close to their hearts that they really, really, truly wanted to make this series open up to the rest of the world. And the word that they kept using for me and for me to focus on was the word culpability. They wanted the West, they wanted first world nations, they wanted us, frankly, to feel as involved and culpable in these markets as possible. And, I mean, the adoption one specifically, it's a very, very difficult one for people to accept that essentially this very noble and altruistic thing, the adoption of a poor person, a poor child, a child who's probably grown up in a war-torn country, is being infiltrated by smugglers and traffickers. And you can just imagine the rigor and the kind of high level of fact-checking and sourcing that we had to do to get the show on air.
Mm-hmm. With the subject of adoption, it's very sensitive because there are a lot of people in this country who, for one reason or another, cannot have kids, and they want to adopt so badly. And it must be heartbreak to them when they learn that the way they got the kid or the child is an illegal one. In the course of researching and reporting this series, when it came to situations like adoption that involved U.S. families, was there anyone in government you could go to get a fix on what how serious the problem is and what the U.S. is doing?
I mean, one of the people that comes to mind straight away and whom we influenced at the time was Ed Royce. Now, he's a congressperson who is very influential. He's met President Kigali. He's met with President Obama to try to bring to light the issue of international adoption. But for my money, he's doing all the wrong things. He is trying to rush this through to try to get the families united with their adoptee children. And the problem with rushing anything through or trying to get this done as quickly as they are is that due diligence cannot rightfully take place. I mean, what you'll find is in the last 3 minutes of our premiere episode, and this is when I got the most kind of comments and a shock kind of a reaction on Facebook and Twitter, was when we interviewed Bill Barry, the head of the consulate, who ran the consulate in the Congo, which is where we were, and he said, you know what, when we can't do the checks ourselves, we'll make a call. Now, the Congo is a humongous country. Making a call to people who often culturally don't even understand what adoption means, the legal right of a child being exchanged from one parent to another. They don't even understand that as a concept. I mean, from what I've experienced, from what I've seen on the ground with these families and these people, due diligence is not taking place. Having said that, these families are well-meaning. They are trying to do a very altruistic and noble thing. The problem is, when you monetize things like people and children, corruption will always find a way to seep in. And right now, we're talking at really high levels of corruption.
We're speaking with Nell as Nell Farhadayat. She is the host and journalist of a new series that premiered last night on Fusion, Sunday nights at 10 o'clock. It's called The Traffickers, and it deals with a very important issue that is worldwide, and yes, it does hit home, too, in these United States, human trafficking. Nell is joining us live from New York. She is en route to the airport, and she is with us live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York here on Blog Talk Radio. Happy you are aboard on this Monday afternoon. You have a question or comment for Nell? Don't be shy. Raise your voice and give us a ring at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Rick Wilber from Philadelphia is in the room. Again, coming up Friday, we will either join you at 4 o'clock or 4:30 Eastern. That is 1 o'clock or 1:30 Pacific. And among our guests, we will have the cinematographer of the popular CW series DC's Lens of Tomorrow, Malin Williams. That's coming up on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. And remember, next week, we have three episodes for you. We're going to get your Thanksgiving off to a great start. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all at the same hour. And joining us on Monday will be the creator of MacGyver, Lee Zoltov. MacGyver rebooted this year, this fall, on CBS, doing very well, top 25 show. We'll get Lee's thoughts about the remake of his popular series that originally starred Richard Dean Anderson. And we'll talk to him about a project called The Next MacGyver, which is out to create a series for television featuring a female engineer. Where is that project at that he did along with Google? We'll ask him about it. Lee's also from MacGyver. 1 week from today, our lead guest, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on tomorrow we televised. What got you interested now in pursuing this issue of human trafficking?
The thing that really got me interested in the trafficking series itself was how multiple the layers are and how gray the connections are between the legal and illegal, between the sort of the world that we live in, that we think we live in, and the underworld. It's always been kind of a part of my career to kind of highlight exploitation as and when it happens. I mean, prior to joining Fusion and working on this project, a lot of my work focused on the effects of war and things like that in places like Afghanistan, in places like Bangladesh, conflict and you know, how people cope in the most difficult of circumstances. So what drew me particularly to the traffickers was that we got a really big commission, 8 episodes, 8 completely different subjects that we could cover, and the executives were very, very hands-off, which for a journalist, I mean, it's a dream, right? Someone gives you a bunch of money, they tell you that they want something big and bombastic, and then they say, you know, just go out there and get me good journalism, and then we'll turn it into something brilliant. And I have to say, for me personally, I worked with 8 of the industry's most talented shooting directors, producers, and each one of them had their own unique, quirky way of working. So over the 14 months that I was out kind of filming and doing all of that stuff, I just learned an immense amount. So it seems to be a perfect marriage, fusion of kind of getting young people to do these kind of larger projects, but also to do it in a very authored way. All of these things were very appealing to me. There's no one thing. I mean, the whole project is a dream come true, really.
Mm-hmm. How far did you and your crews get into this world? Did you do a lot of undercover? Did they do a lot of undercover to get as close as possible to what really goes on here?
I mean, prior to starting the traffickers, I'd never, ever done covert work. Never. Standing here 8 episodes down the series, and I'm pretty au fait with it. You have to learn quite quickly in those situations, because we knew before we started the series that we were going to get as close, I mean, within touching distance, of a lot of very dangerous, very difficult, often criminal people. So the point of the traffickers is to bring you within touching distance of the sex trafficker, within touching distance of the gold trafficker, and to kind of undermine the morality that often surrounds these issues. And the one thing that a lot of people have been telling me so far who have watched it is that the thing that traffickers does so successfully is that it murkies that very moral high ground, that, you know, the waters that we have. It just, we try to make it challenging for the audience to watch and consume. It's challenging television.
And it's easy for people to turn away at this, but in seeing some of the footage, you make it so striking, whether it is the situation with adoption or the situation with rhinos who are slaughtered for their ivory tusks, or, for example, I want to get to this in a little bit, the episode's going to be coming on this coming Sunday, which deals with the issue of organ harvesting, that you can't look away. You have to get your mind and your eyes focused on this.
I mean, exactly. I think this is a very slick, a very deliberate commission by Fusion and my colleagues there. I think what they really wanted to do was to make a series which would be judged based on its journalistic and its kind of journey content. It's a thriller, really. And what it does is it grabs you by the hand and it says, I'm going to take you on a journey over the next 47 minutes that is going to blow your mind. You're not going to believe what I'm showing you. So it was a very brave commission. It was a very deliberate one. And I don't know how people would judge it to be successful or not, but one of the criteria that I deem to be important is that people engage with it. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm making telly, right? It's got to be entertaining. It's got to be slick. It's got to look cinematic, and we achieve all of those things. But more importantly, if we can kind of sneak in a tiny bit of information or educate people, then, you know, we've really done our job. So to make a series like this where the bar was set so high on the cinematography, on making sure that it looked beautiful, but also underpinning that with a solid grounding in fine journalism, not just done by me, but my team of researchers and producers and associate producers, you know, and that you're onto a good thing by that point.
The episode that's coming on this Sunday night deals with the issue of organ harvesting or organ donations. And I know New Tang Dynasty Television, the Chinese American Television Network, has done ongoing reporting about what is going on in China with people whose organs have been harvested, sometimes savagely, for others. What I think people are going to really get shocked about here in advance is it's not just China. It's Bangladesh, and oh, by the way, it's also up north in Canada. Explain that.
Right. Simon, that's a really, really good question. I'm so glad that you pointed that out, because, I mean, when I said I want to make the audience feel part of these dark worlds, feel complicit in these dark worlds, that's what I'm trying to say. An organ donation, an organ kind of harvesting, as you put it, is such a difficult subject to really tackle. And John Conroy, who made this film, agonized over it and agonized over every sentence, every scene, because he cares so much about it. And, you know, I had to go undercover for this one, and it was one of the scariest moments in my professional career, because I go into this hospital where we've got evidence to suggest that the doctor who's performing the kidney operations is doing illegal ones by which money is exchanging hands for these operations to go through. And I had to pretend my mum was in stage 4 renal failure and dying. And, you know, when you're undercover like that, you have to believe the story in order to convince the mark that you know, the person that you're talking to, that you're trying to, the way it is. And I found myself believing that my mum's dying of kidney failure, in which case, all of a sudden, in the spin of a coin, I was like, this is fine. No one's dying here. So what if I'm paying someone to save my mother's life? You know, I would do that. I would do that. And so instantly you're gripped. You are absolutely drawn into this world that you thought was nefarious and dark and somewhere over there, you know? So I think Sunday night's episode is going to be really, really impactful. It's just, it's a thriller of a ride, really.
Do any of the doctors that you saw doing this or involved with this, no matter what the location, do any of them wrestle with their conscience? They're like, you know, I'm violating the Hippocratic Oath here. That's what I pledged to be as a doctor or a nurse, and I'm on the verge of violating that oath. Is there any conscience searching here?
I think they do it because of the Hippocratic Oath. I think they do it because they want to do no harm. And you have to understand that if a kidney being taken out of a person and put into another person in, you know, sterile surroundings in a hospital by a professional who's done it thousands of times, the chances of the donor dying are very slim, unless it's post-operative. If the chances of dying are so very slim, what you've done essentially is save a life without taking a life. How can that be a bad thing? You've saved the life of my mother, and the other person who's donated the kidney goes away with money and goes away without his life being taken. So how is that a bad thing? That way it was explained to me by this doctor, and I've got to say, I find that argument very difficult to argue with.
We're speaking with Nell Hedaya. She is the host and the journalist behind The Traffickers. It's Fusion's new documentary series. It's on Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Kicked off last night, continues next Sunday with this organ episode that is definitely must-see, and really not just must-see, but must-think about television. Nell joins me here in New York. She is on her way to one local airport on assignment. She joins us. We're delighted she took the time to be with us this Monday afternoon here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Happy start of your week. Delighted you're with us for the program All About Television. You have a question or a comment for Nell, give us a call and use the number 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up next Tuesday on Tomorrow Be Televised, part of our back-to-back-to-back episodes Thanksgiving week, we'll introduce you to an entrepreneur who has, in the last couple of months, been launching a tip series on broadcast television through syndication. Her name is Francie Black. I met her at NAB New York last week at the Jacob Javits Center, and she was there, one of the few content people in a technology show that was there. Her venture is called Tech Tango Today, and she will be with us next Tuesday as part of our Thanksgiving week triple header, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Is there anyone in any of the episodes that you did that's a champion against trafficking, that's trying to do something to turn the tide?
I mean, in the second episode that went out last night and is now available on iTunes, if people want to go and watch it, just search for The Traffickers, we meet a park ranger who works in South Africa. Now, I have to give you a bit of context. As you know, this is post-apartheid South Africa. On the surface, racial issues, the black and white issues have been solved, essentially. But in reality, there are, as I found out, jobs that white people do and then jobs that black people do. And I got to meet a young park ranger by the name of Tumi, and he was in a position usually inhabited by white folk. So it's very, very rare for him to get this job, and he knew that. And he was managing a whole bunch of young guys who were trying to keep these rhinos safe. And he had been through some, I mean, horrific instances. He's been on the receiving end of fire. He's had to shoot people himself to protect these rhinos. But the poachers and the traffickers tried to get to him through his family. They found out where his village is. They sent people to the village, and they assaulted his home. They harmed his wife and harmed his child, his five-year-old daughter. And when I asked Tumi about this and said, why do you continue, your family's life is in danger? And he said, if I don't, who will? And why should I stop because of what they are trying to achieve? If I move aside, I'm setting an example for the boys that work underneath me, for my men. And I'm setting an example for every other to do a job that is traditionally not seen befitting of them. So this man single-handedly is carrying so many, you know, burdens on his shoulders. He's risking his life every day for rhinos. I mean, it's some of the people that I met on this journey just go beyond the call of duty to stop trafficking in all its forms. And Tumi will be somebody that 20 years later I'll still remember, and I'll still be proud of having met him.
Do you want to continue now to follow this situation through, or are you be working on other assignments down the road?
For now, I'm taking a very, very well-earned break, I feel. I've been promoting this for about a month, and I've been on the road for 12. So it's been a long journey to make The Traffickers. I hope people enjoy it. I hope people are informed by watching it. I hope it is a thriller and the kind of, you know, the fast-paced documentary style that I want to see on television. And then hopefully, who knows, Fusion will commission season 2 and we'll get going on kind of not necessarily more of the same, not necessarily more traffickers, but we'll try to explore another big part of our lives and get people to feel responsible for the world that we live in.
Back in the early 1960s, the great and late journalist Edward R. Murrow did a CBS News special called Harvest of Shame. It was all about the migrant workers in the United States. And at the end of the special, he mentioned that there was an opportunity for legislation that could help the migrants, no matter where they existed. And in part, he said, I'm paraphrasing, the people you met in this documentary have the strength to harvest your fruits and vegetables. They don't have the strength or the voice to advocate for themselves. Maybe we do. And maybe in this case of trafficking, no matter the kind of trafficking, maybe we do again. Check out Fusion's The Traffickers this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And remember, check your local listings for where Fusion is available in your area on cable and satellite. Fusion owned by Univision. And for those of you who want to know how you can get involved, by the way, here's where you go online, www.fusion.net. That's www.fusion.net. Once again, The Traffickers, this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Dale Hayadat, thank you again for being with us. Congratulations on all the work you and your crews have done. Let's hope that it really results in a reduction of trafficking and not the other way around. And it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for all the great work you did.
The pleasure is all mine. Have a lovely show. Thank you again.
You too, and safe journey wherever you're going. And now take care.
Cheers. I'm going home. Bye, Simon.
Now, Maida, joining us live from New York en route to our journey home at one of the local airports here in the greater New York metropolitan area. We thank her again for taking the time en route. This half hour on Tomorrow will be televised. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We are bringing back the question we posed a week ago. No winner yet. Let's try again this week. If you know the answer and you're first with the correct answer, you can win the brand new book, I Was Saved by the Bell, by the executive producer of that series, Peter Engel. He was with us on this show a week ago, and he will be tomorrow at the NBC store here in New York at 30 Rockefeller Plaza signing copies of that book, which officially comes out tomorrow. Plus, we also have our prize, the book Twin Peaks FAQ from Applause. Here is the question. On Saved by the Bell, what was the first name of Screech, played by Dustin Diamond? On Saved by the Bell, what was Screech's first name? What was Screech's first name? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04 at yahoo.com. It's simonapple04 at yahoo.com. Please include your name and your mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you win. I Was Saved by the Bell by Peter Engel and Twin Peaks FAQ, the book that showcases the classic 1990s ABC mystery series from David Lynch and Mark Frost. It's coming back all new on Showtime next year. Frost and Lynch will write all the episodes. David Lynch will direct, and many of the original cast members, including Kyle MacLachlan, will be back on board. So you can get both books by emailing me with that answer. If you're first, you get it. SimonApple04 at yahoo.com. You also use Twitter for the answer. Just tweet hashtag TWBT. That's hashtag TWBT. The Twitter option made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack. You can learn how at www.hopscotch.com. That's www.hopscotch.com. Either way, use email, use Twitter. You're first with the correct answer. You will win. I Was Saved by the Bell by Peter Engel and Twin Peaks FAQ from Applause Books. And remember, once again, if you're in the New York area, you can head out to the NBC store located at NBC headquarters at 30 Rockefeller Plaza and catch Peter Engel in person. And he signs copies of that book, which will be formally published tomorrow. And if you want to catch the interview we did last week with Peter Engel, it was a wonderful one. Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check out the podcast. It's available 24/7 at iTunes.com. And if you have Apple TV with all those 9,000 wonderful apps, you can also use the iTunes podcast app there, and you can hear and watch us. If you don't have Apple TV, well, get it at your local Apple store, or you can order it online. This is Tomorrow We Televised. We are the promo about the Tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we love hearing from you. So if you want to anytime check us out with some thoughts, do so at our wonderful email address, simonapple04 at yahoo.com. And by the way, we have a feature that we do regularly called the Show to Know. If it's a TV show that you like, you think doesn't get enough attention from a lot of folks, including we journalists, well, let me know. We'll give it attention and we'll give you the credit for it. Again, simonapple04 at yahoo.com. You can also follow me on Facebook and on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, however you communicate, we always appreciate it, and I do return emails in 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters, and we really do appreciate it. Again, if you missed our news note at the top of the program, Gwen Ifill, the co-anchor of the PBS NewsHour, the long-running host of Washington Week in Review, Friday nights on PBS, passed away earlier today from cancer, and I have more to say about Gwen Ifill, and also about somebody else in the Washington journalism TV field who decided to retire yesterday. We'll talk about that, and we'll do something special in both their honors, both Gwen Ifill and the other person we'll talk about. We'll do that in our next half hour. Remember, coming up on Friday, we will be with you either at 4 or 4:30 Eastern time. That's 1:30 Pacific here on Blog Talk Radio. And our guests will include Malin Williams, the cinematographer of Legends of Tomorrow. It's on every week on the CW. And again, next week, back-to-back-to-back episodes, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at least an hour each day. We kick it off on Monday with Lee Zoltov, the creator of MacGyver, and we have a 90-minute special coming up next Wednesday, November 23rd. Great pre-Thanksgiving guest, the producer of Savage Kingdom, the Nat Geo Wild miniseries that premieres over Thanksgiving weekend, Harry Marshall. We will have the director of the CMT documentary, Chicken People. I've seen it completed. It's a lot of fun. Nicole Heitken will be with us, and we'll have the producer, writer, and director of BYU TV's new dramatic special. It's called Winter Thaw with John Rhys Davies in a lead role. That is all coming up Wednesday, 90-minute special for pre-Thanksgiving Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tamale Televised. When we come back, the folks behind Skin Wars have a new series coming tomorrow on GSN. It's called Window Warriors, and it's all about those department store windows. You ever wonder what makes them go? Well, that series will have 8 people who will be going for $100,000, and we'll join our guests, the executive producers. They're here in New York, and we'll tell you why. That's all coming up. Plus, more on Gwen Ifill and a wonderful Washington Journalist for CBS, Bill Plant, who had his last day yesterday. That's all coming up after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Shut Up a Second. It's comedy with an unusual twist. Catch your Wednesdays various times right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, Best of BTR available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Are We Televised this Monday afternoon. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, 60 degrees here in the greater New York metro area. We welcome you again to the program All About Television. Simon Applebaum, delighted to be on the ride for you. And we have a wonderful pair of guests coming your way next. You have a question or comment for them? Give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number get anywhere you catch us from, the country around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. And we got the chat room going, SimonApple04 by name. It's at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our very good friend Rick Webb is in the room from Philly. And you can join him. So phone call or chat room, we will hear you. Don't forget, you can connect to us by using Facebook Timeline. Just click on that Facebook icon. It's on the Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Skin Wars has been one of the most popular programs on GSN over the last few years. And now the folks behind that show are involved in a new series premiering tomorrow night. It's called Window Warriors, and it deals with people who want to do those department store windows that you see here in New York, in places like Macy's, places like Bloomingdale's, Neiman Marcus, all over the country, etc. But this case, they're going for $100,000 and some changing, life-changing deals. Joining us live from New York, we'll tell you why they're here in New York in a second, the executive producer of the program, Michael Levitt and Jill Galante. Hi, Michael and Jill. Welcome in.
Hello, Simon.
Hi there.
And if Michael's familiar voice, he was with us a couple years ago when he was doing the Daytime Emmy Awards for Pop TV. And Michael and Jill, first of all, with your other show, Skin Wars, you have a nice announcement to make.
Absolutely. Today's a wonderful day for us because we just found out not too long ago that we were nominated for a Critics' Choice Award for Skin Wars in the reality competition category. And what makes it even more wonderful is the illustrious competition that we have, which includes shows like The Voice, The Amazing Race, and America's Got Talent. So we're truly honored and couldn't be more excited, to be speaking with you now about Window Warriors.
Well, it's a pleasure for both of you. Congratulations on the honor. We should say the Critics' Choice Award, by the way, I believe will be coming in December next month on A&E. They are doing it for the second year in a row, and that's wonderful competition you're up against, and good luck no matter what. Just being nominated, knowing back from the TV critics involved, broadcast critics involved, is a big honor. Jill, talk about Window Warriors. How long has this been? You're very welcome. Jill, how long has Window Warriors been in the making for?
About a year, actually. We took a very, very deep dive to research, you know, what does it take to build these windows? Who are these people? We learned that this is an actual major. These people are called visual merchandisers. We went to conventions to study the mannequins and listen to conferences and figure out how these people make these. And we were excited to learn that this is a very popular a major, and there's waiting lists to get in them, and we were just so happy that so many people wanted to try out for the show.
Michael, did either you or Jill, like, stroll through the park one day in New York or in somewhere, went by a department store, and like, your brain started going?
Absolutely. The show was definitely inspired by the brilliant windows of both New York and London. I remember about 3 or 4 years ago walking by a Louis Vuitton window, and the creative of the window was that the bag had been stolen. So the bag was actually missing, but there was crime tape and a red rotating police light. And I thought, these windows are so incredibly clever. There's such a story being told, and it has to be so ripe for a great competition show. And we couldn't believe that it was untapped, that nobody had done a show like this before. And so it's been really thrilling to be able to remember that day and then see our vision come to life tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Skin War, Jill, one of the fun things about that long-running program is that you feature people who have never done the art you demonstrate, body painting. Is that the same thing with Window Warriors, that you decided to bring artists in who have never looked at doing a display window and just sort of putting them, it's like a fish out of water?
Well, actually, no. These people, they come from various backgrounds. They have art degrees with visual training. Some of them come from just retail, where one day they stepped into a window to help out and realized that this was their passion and craft and got very good at it and moved themselves up to the ladder. So, yeah, some of these people have actual degrees in visual technique and training to design these windows, and others, you know, come from art or just retail, but they all have experience in creating windows. It's such a specific, unique talent.
And there's really a second challenge here too, Michael, which is it's not just about the medium. It's about, namely, the store display itself. It's also about the message that the medium brings to the public. And so when these artists are going through paces on your competition, they have to think about that equally, maybe even more, than just how do I be creative with these displays.
Absolutely. So the judging criteria of the show, they're judged on creativity, execution, but also on brand messaging. So this is a show truly about art meets commerce. And in fact, in every single episode, there's a guest judge that represents a different retailer. So somebody could do a really beautiful or whimsical or creative window, but yet they may not hit the sweet spot of that retailer's demographic, and therefore they don't win that challenge. So this series has 6 episodes. So each episode, as I said, is themed by a different retailer with a different retailer participating. So tomorrow night they will be working with Macy's. And then there's an episode with Lush Handmade Cosmetics, Hot Topic, Sprinkles, and also Anthropologie. So we are thrilled that we have the creme de la creme of retailers participating on this show, which obviously gives it, you know, a lot of credibility out of the starting gate.
We're speaking with Michael Levitt and Jim Vellante. They are the executive producers of now the Critics' Choice nominated Skin Wars, which has been a favorite on GSN the last couple of years. And tomorrow night they kick off a run of a new show. It's called Window Warriors. It's all about those department store windows. And the competitors, 8 of them, are going to be playing for $100,000 in prize money and some life-changing design experiences, one of which is a big one here in New York, and we'll get to that shortly. And they're joining us live from here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, who is live from New York. Thanks for being with us on the program All About Television. If you have a question or a comment for Michael or Jill, get on that phone and get your voice going at 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you don't know where it is, find it at our homepage, blogcafe.com/televised. That's where you can also check out recent episodes of our show with people like Peter Engel, the executive producer of Saved by the Bell, Norman Lear, Jay Bryant, the deaf filmmaker who wants to break into television. We had her on BK Live earlier today, and she was with us 2 weeks ago. Marvelous talent. And she has made some progress, by the way, since our show. You can check out the BK Live. By the way, if you want to check out the BK Live thing that we did today, check out YouTube.com/BrickTV. YouTube.com/BrickTV tomorrow or Wednesday at the latest. That's when that segment will be posted. Michael, talk about the contestants and what kind of challenges you gave them.
So the contestants had a variety of challenges throughout the series. I don't want to give too much away, but there is definitely a clever layer within each episode based on that retailer's core values. So if one retailer, their core values has to do with, let's say, the environment, that might be a requirement of the challenge where they have to work with recycled products, for example. So that's the kind of creative that we strive for in each episode, and it really paid off and made each of the episodes a unique event in and of itself.
And another thing is, it can't just be the artist's vision of what they want to do. They must circle back and hit the brand's needs. That's really the most incredible point to hit.
Do they get any, Joe, thing with that, do they get any mentoring from anywhere, from any department stores they work with or they're designing for?
I'm sorry, did you say mentoring?
Yes, so get any mentoring, get any direction, either from the judges or from any department stores that they're designing displays for?
Yes, they get the brand concept and what they should hit from that particular retailer. And then we have Douglas Little, our judge, who comes from Bergdorf's, and he walks around, checks in to see what their concept is, what direction they're going, you know, and he'll weigh in to say, hey, you know, you're on the right track, or I'm worried about this.
And Simon, in addition to Douglas Little, the wonderful and always hilarious Carson Kressley is one of our other judges, along with Ty Bouchon, who is a style expert and style ambassador from InStyle magazine. And so all of them walk around, weigh in midway through the challenge. And it's interesting because they're very honest and unapologetic about how they're feeling about the progress that the designers are making. And some of them, some of the designers embrace the constructive criticism or suggestions, and some of the designers choose not to listen and continue on with their vision. And so it makes for a really interesting show to see how they fare at the end when they're finally being judged and when we ultimately declare a winner and then send someone home in each episode.
It's sort of like the perfect storm. You have artists, a small space to work in, because remember, those windows are only about 6 feet in depth, and then they have this tight timeline of 2 days. So it's a lot of pressure.
Talk about the host there, Jill. You got someone who I can remember from NYPD Blue, Garcia Bubo, who lately has become a really good host on Hollywood Today Live, the syndicated series that's on the Fox stations around the country.
Yeah, so I'll answer that one. So our host is the lovely Garcelle Bouvet, who not only is gorgeous, but beautiful, as beautiful inside as she is outside. And what makes her really organic and fit in wonderfully to the show is that not only is she a lover of fashion, but she was also a top model before becoming an actress. So she really complements the show the same way Rebecca Romijn was an organic fit for Skin Wars, having been the first model to be body painted for Sports Illustrated. So it's really important that both the host and the judges have credibility and an organic love and passion for what we're celebrating. So Window Warriors, the ensemble, they're dynamic. They're so much fun. I mean, you can imagine with Carson Kressley in the mix, there's never a dull moment. And it goes a long way in creating an ease with the designers, because you can, if you think about it, doing a reality show is stressful. These are talented designers, but they're not used to being in a pressure cooker and having to put together a spectacular window in a 2-day period. So having someone like Carson or someone as lovely as Garcelle in the mix is very helpful in really encouraging them to give it their all. And at the end of the day, while they may be, as I said, unapologetic or brutally honest, all of our judges and Garcelle are rooting for these people. And so this is not mean-spirited television. It's actually a great show for the entire family to watch, the same way Skin Wars is. Kids will love it. Parents will love it. And so will grandparents.
It's a natural because everyone loves department store windows. And you see them in films all over the place dealing with the holiday season, whether it's Almost Christmas, which just came out, or, of course, the classic Miracle on 34th Street, where one of the first things you see in that film after Santa Claus walks by the opening credits, played by the great Edwin Gwynn, is the department store display with the reindeer. And so it's like so natural.
Absolutely, and I will say that Miracle on 34th Street is one of my all-time favorite movies. I look forward to watching that every year. We're actually here now in New York City. We're based in Los Angeles, but we're actually shooting the final scene of our finale this week because the winner of Window Warriors, not only do they win $100,000, but they win the opportunity to design a holiday display at Macy's Herald Square in New York City. So that is truly the Super Bowl of being a window designer. And so to be here and think about the days of Macy's and Gimbel's and the window designs and how this has been an institution passed down from generation to generation. I mean, this has been going on since the 1800s with these windows at Macy's. And so to have a partnership with them where the winner gets to actually design a holiday window for them is spectacular.
Indeed. And, I mean, and Simon, what family member doesn't have a memory of walking down and seeing some sort of display? I mean, it's so incredibly relatable. And everyone wonders, who are these folks? How did this get done? Well, that's exactly sort of was our experience. And we dove deep and we figured it out and we created a show on this. And we couldn't be happier with the outcome of it.
And Jill always likes to say that people think elves come in and make these windows. So to be able to pull the veil off and really expose that this is a wonderful profession through a show like Window Warriors has really been rewarding.
Indeed.
And Window Warriors premieres on GSN tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. We've got the key executive producer of the series, Michael Levitt, and Joe Galarte with us. They're both live in New York. I have a feeling they're right near Macy's because that's where they're going to be filming or taping the final segments of this wonderful series. Again, premieres tomorrow night on GSN, the Game Show Network, and that's 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And if you have a question or comment for Michael or Jill, give us that ring, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04. And hey, welcome guest 1688 has just joined us, along with Rip Webb, our friend from Philadelphia. Use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. And remember, next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we will get your Thanksgiving week off the ground with hour-long editions, back to back to back, each day of Tomorrow We Televise. And kicking it off next Monday will be the creator of MacGyver, Lee Zoltov. MacGyver's reboot started 2 months ago on CBS. It's one of the top new series of the year on Friday nights, and we will have Lee talking about that, as well as updating us on a project that we actually talked about a couple years ago called The Next MacGyver. It's about a effort with Google to try to get a scripted television series featuring a female MacGyver. We'll find out where that is at. Lee Zoltov, MacGyver, 1 week from today, our lead guest, the first of our back-to-back-to-back Thanksgiving week episodes, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific here on Tomorrow We Televise. Jill, what was the most interesting thing you learned about all these contestants in terms of adapting to this art of display?
How incredibly creative they are and what they can do in such a small space and how they can tell a story and the detail of their craftsmanship and their work. So basically it's what they create in that small little space and how effective it is. And, you know, we sort of like to say it's where art meets commerce because at the end of the day, they have to bring people into the store. They have to sell stuff through these windows. So I think that was the big takeaway for me.
The industry also said that they like to second rule, that window has to grab.
Mm-hmm. Michael, for people like Macy's.
I'm sorry.
Michael, for people like – I'm sorry. Say it again. We had a little bit of a cut on the line.
Oh, I was saying that they call it – that the industry calls it the three-second rule, that you have 3 seconds to really grab the customer walking by on the street and get them in the store.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what's the reaction from the Macy's and from the other department stores that are working with you and Jill on this series? What do they have to say about the contestants, their creativity, what contribution they're making to their business?
Sure. So, you know, one of the mandates we had from GSN when they were interested in the show was that they asked us to attach a major retailer because everybody felt it would be important to have that credibility. And so Jill and I hit the road. We went to Chicago and New York and made the rounds. And not only did we come back with one retailer, we came back with the five I mentioned, including Anthropology and Hot Topic, Sprinkles, and Lush. But we also created a partnership with General Growth Properties, known as GGP. They are arguably the largest mall developer in the country. They have 140 malls nationwide, including Water Tower Place in Chicago and Fashion Show in Vegas and Glendale Galleria in Los Angeles, among many. And through that partnership, they have decided to promote our show in all of their malls across the country. So I know many of the people listening have probably seen big banners or digital displays when they've been shopping. And the reason that we were so successful in these partnerships is because the reality is brick-and-mortar shopping experience has been dying off because of shopping online. And so it's really put an onus on that industry to figure out creative and clever ways to create more than just a shopping experience, but rather a lifestyle experience. So for us to come along with a show that celebrates the brick-and-mortar shopping experience was a huge win for them, and great timing, and obviously a huge win for us.
Mm-hmm. Michael and Joe, when you go back to work on Skin Wars, and what else do you and your people have coming up in the year ahead?
Well, we actually, we are hoping for a season 4 of Skin Wars. And in addition, we have 4 or 5 other projects that are in serious stages of development that we hope we can talk to you about in more detail in the weeks or months to come. But I will say that Jill and I, our sort of theme is we love to create shows that are feel-good television, guilty-free laughter, things that aren't mean-spirited, because, you know, especially in this crazy world we live in, we think that's an important way to go creatively.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, Michael and Jill, I want to congratulate you for one episode you did with Skin Wars, the one dealing with breast cancer patients. That was an extraordinary hour of television. That was an extraordinary thing to do. And the ramifications of what you did go far beyond that hour. Anyone who saw that hour knows that people's lives were literally transformed. Those breast cancer patients' lives were literally transformed, and the artists who did their work by what happened there. And I think you should get tremendous congratulations for that.
Well, thank you so much for pointing that out. We knew that we wanted to do an episode with a pro-social theme. And obviously, breast cancer was a really organic fit to the show because we are painting nude models. But never did we expect that sort of emotional connection with the survivors that graciously agreed to model for us in that episode. And it was truly a magical experience because many of these women had recently had mastectomies or double mastectomies and had not looked at their bodies until they were on our show following their surgery. So it was beautiful and incredible. And you know what, Simon, it is proof that reality can do great things, reality television. And we were so proud to be able to be a part of that and make that happen.
And those survivors actually reached out to us and wrote beautiful emails and letters thanking us, and they got their confidence back with their body. They felt great again about themselves, and it was because of their relationship and experience with our artist on Skin Wars. So that made Michael and I feel just terrific.
And the other thing is a lot of women, is, as you know, get permanent tattoos after they have surgery. So there was sort of a practical reason for them doing this as well, because being painted, being body painted is temporary, and it gave them an idea of, you know, what they might end up doing in more of a permanent fashion with a body tattoo. So it did wonderful and beautiful things. And the other thing I just want to tell you quickly, and she may kill me for saying this or not, but Jill here was actually body painted for the fun of it. Everybody says, when are you, you know, us being the creators of Skin Wars, when are you guys going to do it? And I will tell you, this man with his pot belly will never be doing it. But Jill had the confidence with her rockin' body, and she was painted. Tell them what they painted
sure,
you as.
Sure. Our painter, our artist, Avi, painted me, and I did a camouflage blend. That is where you blend into the background, and I almost literally disappear. And I did it on a golf course because golf is one of my favorite sports, and I thought, why not? And it is so beautiful. It took 4 hours. My back got sunburned. Avi said I was a terrific model. I took care of myself. I ate. I had water throughout it. And at the end of the day, I'm so happy I did it. I feel like that's really diving deep. And I just don't really.
And you know what, Simon? We can send that to you. It might be, if you want, it might be fun for you to post for your listeners to actually see that.
Okay, let's see if we can do that. We'll try to post it for sure. Window Warriors premieres tomorrow night on GSN, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Check your locals aware. GSN's available in your area, the Game Show Network, on cable and satellite. For more details, GSN.com, once again, GSN.com. And again, Michael and Jill, congratulations on Skin Wars getting a Critics' Choice nomination. Critics' Choice Awards next month, live from Hollywood on A&E. Michael Levitt, Jill Galante, thank you again for joining us. All the very best to Window Wars tomorrow night. You may have another very special show on GSN coming up.
Thank you so much, Simon. We love talking to you and always appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for the time, and I'll send you that photo.
You got it. You're welcome, both of you. All the best. Have a great time with Macy's and wrapping up the show in style tonight. Take care.
Bye-bye. Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
You too. All the greatest. Michael Levitt, Jill Galante joining us live from New York. Once again, if you missed the beginning of the show, Gwen Ifill, the long-running host of Washington Week in Review on PBS and more recently the co-anchor of PBS NewsHour, passed away today after a month of dealing with cancer. We will have more on her on Friday's show. We're running out of time. Also, we want to say that yesterday, a great stalwart in Washington journalism for many years with CBS, in fact, 5 decades, Bill Plant, had his last day on the job yesterday. He did everything from anchoring the CBS Morning News, other programs as well, and then, of course, covering presidents from Ronald Reagan on up. We will do something special for both of them on Friday's episode. And coming up on Friday, we'll either be on at 4 or 4:30 Eastern, 1 or 1:30 Pacific. Malin Williams, the cinematographer on DC's Legends of Tomorrow on the CW, will be among our guests. Remember, we'd like to hear from you, so join us at SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. Again, whatever you say, we appreciate, because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not for those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Cho is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. But tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week. We're back Friday, either at 4 or 4:30 Eastern, 1 or 1:30 Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. Again, thanks to all of our guests for the last 90 minutes. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Be safe and be great out there. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.